Welcome back to Alphabet Scoop. This is episode 32, and I don't know what to say. What is there to say? It's been a pretty slow week. What do you want to start with?
Let's start with Samsung.
Yeah, I guess that was probably the most interesting thing that happened today. Probably the most interesting thing that happened all week, honestly.
Yeah. Middle of the week.
Sure. Yeah, go ahead.
Samsung Developer Conference kicked off today with a keynote that everybody was expecting. The company announced this Infinity Flex display on prototype hardware, but there's going to be an actual shipping phone, they're calling it, sometime next year. So Samsung has been rumored for weeks, months, I guess, to be releasing a phone that can fold into a tablet. Today we learned that the exact implementation is there are two screens when you fold it. The inside of the display has one, I think it's a 7-inch screen, but when you fold it, the outside cover has another. That's the one you primarily use as a smartphone.
Right. Are we calling this the Galaxy F yet?
The Galaxy F?
I mean, that's what everyone's been calling it. That's the SEO title. That's the keyword.
I don't know.
Yeah, it. I don't know if it's a pretty bad name if that's what they decide to actually go with.
Yeah, and as is, like our own Ben Shun pointed out that it looks like a Nintendo DS, like this in this thick prototype case that hides the final design. It looks like the original DS, which is quite on point.
Is it in a case?
Yeah,
is that in? Did they say that on stage? Is in a case?
Yeah, to hide the final industrial design.
That's so lame. On this note, actually, I whenever the rumors started swirling that they were going to announce a foldable phone at a developer conference, I immediately was like, that doesn't make any sense. Because, I mean, it is kind of a niche product and kind of like, you know, it's a new category of device. So in that sense, it kind of makes sense to show the tech off for the first time. But I think a lot of people today, correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I saw on Twitter and the hype and stuff, it seemed like a lot of people were expecting them to like actually announce a phone today. And I think that from the get-go, for me, that seemed like it was unlikely.
Yeah, I never thought they were going to launch at this conference. But honestly, this is a smart approach, I think. Actually showing off the tech that's needed.
Yeah, it's interesting though that Google scooped them.
Yeah,
in a way,
holding developer conferences on the same day. We're going to talk about the Android Dev Summit in a moment, but basically, Dave Burke, VP of Engineering for Android, he scooped the Samsung presenters by announcing it in like the first 10 minutes, announcing the new Android foldables device category.
Yeah, is this a category of devices like, well, I guess it's not the same thing as like an OS, because you know it's confusing, because if you say Android foldables, it sounds like an offshoot of the operating system, in the same way you would call like Android TV or Android Wear or Android Go or Android whatever.
I think Android Go is the best comparison there. It's still the same thing. Android Go, Android One. I think that's. There is precedent for this name.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. And another thing was, I haven't been following this, so forgive me. But like, didn't Ron say something about how this apps work on even non-foldable devices?
He had some speculation about the underlying API being able to work across. Being able to improve Android's handling when you rotate display from portrait to landscape. Google hasn't documented any of these developments yet.
Right.
But it's just sounds announced. About right.
Yeah, it would make sense, because he makes a good point that Google traditionally has not really handled landscape apps all too well.
I might be... always have auto rotation off. I've never
gotten the point of that. Yeah, for sure.
Some people apparently most people actively switch the orientation of their phone, which is kind of baffling to me, but I've never done it.
Didn't the Pixel launcher at one point allow you to do landscape, or was that added? And okay, it still lets you. I didn't know. I don't know if it was removed recently. For some reason, I thought that it was removed recently, but that's like the most. I don't know what is the use case for that, unless for some reason you have some kind of use case where you're permanently docking a phone. Like if you have a phone that's like permanently docked in landscape orientation, like. Say you hacked together like a custom heads up display for your car or something, and you know you permanently put a phone in there. Then it would make sense to have that option at least. But in like day to day use, I don't know. In my many years of using Android phones, if I've ever used my phone in landscape a single time, like in terms of the home screen, the launcher. I mean.
This is the perfect time to ask you what you think about foldables in general.
Yeah, I think that they're interesting and they're really cool. Like it's kind of like yes, the you know, I absolutely. Mean the Axon yeah. the ZTE Axon M comes to mind and it's cool. Like it's really cool tech. And obviously in that case it was basically two separate phones almost that folded over each other. Rather than being one continuous piece of, you know, screen that you can open up and have like a tablet-like interface, but I think I don't know. It's cool, and I think that there may be specific use cases where it really makes a lot of sense. But I feel like one, it's going to be these devices at least out the gate are going to be really expensive, with all that hardware. I mean, the display tech is going to be the really expensive part because you know they're having to do so many innovations to even make it possible in the first place, and they need to pay back that R&D somehow. on top of the fact that display components are the most expensive component in a smartphone, period, and it looks like this device that Samsung showed off today has two displays. Yep. Presumably, when this product actually launches. We'll know that they actually are pretty decent displays. And so, I mean, to me, it seems like this is what, I mean, Samsung's top of the line flagships start at $1,000 at this point. So it's like, is this a $1,400 device? Is this a $1,500 device? Is it a $2,000 device? It seems like it's going to be really expensive. And how are they going to be sold? Are they going to be sold as tablets unlocked? And they're going to be, you know, just, you know, you bring your own carrier basically, or are these going to actually be sitting on shelves in carrier stores next to the Note 9 and the Galaxy S9 and the Pixel 3 and et cetera, and trying to compete for that $50 a month carrier bill? Like, I don't know. I just don't see the market for them in terms of, like, it seems like a very enthusiast kind of product.
So several fronts. Let's start with pricing. I think what's curious is it's whether Samsung is charging it as you're buying a phone and you're buying a tablet, so that justifies the surcharge. I'm also wondering if that's what consumers think they'll be getting. It's like $1,000 plus, I don't know, $500 in the case of like a decent iPad. I wonder if that will be enough. That will justify consumers that this is worth what I'm getting for. Next point, I think this is going to be sold as a phone. Query, carrier contracts, cellular reception, that kind of thing. And yes, I definitely agree that this is a futuristic. This is super cool. This is futuristic. Maybe the first few generations won't get it there, but again, Samsung is pretty good at display tech, I think. If anybody can make a good display that folds, and I think we've heard rumors about LG also following along, I think that the technology will be there, that the technology will be able to fit this form factor. I think the question is whether consumers want it at the end of the day.
Yeah, I think it really is going to hinge on how good the user experience is. And I mean, I talk about user experience stuff a lot. It's one of the main things that I prefer the Pixel over all other Android phones, basically. It's a reason why I have an appreciation for Apple's products in some ways. I think that a lot of this is actually going to depend on Google and how this Android Foldables operating system actually works. Because I think that one thing that will make these destined to fail is if they cost $1,500. Which is likely. And they are a really bad tablet and they're a really bad phone. You know, most people don't want a product that does everything, but does everything poorly. What's your example?
Samsung touted like the ability to use three apps simultaneously. That's what they said on stage. But if we're being honest, what people are going to use this for is video. Like what people buy tablets for are video. So honestly, like this is a consumption device. This isn't a productivity fever dream thought up by all these companies that want to replace the laptop.
Yeah, I agree. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head. I think with iPads, even with the iPad Pro, which just launched the new iPad Pros, it's like even Apple with the ridiculous hardware that these things have, it's a hard sell to get people to use these as an actual productive device, like a productivity device. And in terms of sheer hardware and performance, this Samsung foldable thing is not going to be anywhere close to the top of the line tablets, no matter who they're made by, probably. In terms of sheer specs and screen size and stuff like that. So it's like, and not to mention the potential, you know, accessory ecosystem. Like, anyways, I won't get into that. But I think that with the foldable form factor, you're right. I think people are going to use it in phone form factor most of the time, and then unfold it if they want to consume something. It makes sense to get all that screen space to watch a video or something. Another thing that's interesting to me to think about is this going to make it socially acceptable to walk around on the street and look down at an iPad while you're walking? Because as of right now, this is not something that's acceptable. I don't think. I mean, it's very rare for you to see people walking around holding a tablet of any kind with two hands.
A book.
But even a book is like
my childhood in a nutshell.
Yeah, but like how many times do you walk down the street in like New York or San Francisco or whatever and see people walking down the street gripping a 12.9-inch iPad with both hands and doodling on it with an Apple Pencil? And this unfoldable thing, it's going to look really dorky if you're walking around with
such a huge thing. I think it's smaller than that. I honestly think it's smaller than that. It won't be that bad.
Well, the thing is, though, maybe this one that Samsung's showing off today is smaller than that. But if they're not that much bigger, then why not just have a larger screen phone? What's the point of the foldable form factor unless you get significantly more screen space? Mm-hmm. I think it makes sense if the screen is bigger. I think that means the form factor makes more sense because you get the benefit of having a small phone and you can unfold it and get an iPad like or tablet like experience. If the screen is only 6 inches when you unfold it or 7 inches, then it's like, why not just have a note nine or whatever large screen device that's already mm-hmm. out there. I don't know. I just don't see it. For me personally, it's not compelling at all. I 100% think it's really cool. But that's where it ends for me. Yeah.
Have you ever wanted to use two landscape apps side by side? Have you ever had that need? Yeah.
In the case of using like the Pixel Slate, for instance, I can see that because you're using it as a productivity device and it has a more desktop-esque windowed operating system. And so using two apps that are side by side in that case makes more sense because you're actually being productive with it and multitasking. Is this foldable Samsung phone going to have a dockable keyboard so that you can like it? No, it's not. It might, you can connect a Bluetooth one, I guess, but it's not, I agree with you. I don't think it's going to be a productivity device the way Samsung is trying to frame it. I don't think anyone will actually use it that way, even if they can.
So why is Google bothering? Why are they bothering with OS level support?
Well, I think with Google, it's like anytime there's a new fad, they kind of have to. They don't have a choice, because otherwise all these OEMs are just going to take it their own direction. There's going to be fragmentation and there won't be apps that work, and you know, everything will fall apart. Because at the end of the day, Google wants all of its apps and services. Google wants every little dollar they can funneling back into people using their apps and buying apps on the Play Store that are and using their services. And if they just sit on the sidelines while other companies mess everything up, then you know,
yeah,
it's like, that's fair. I think in this case it's like Samsung has enough pull in the market. If it had been Motorola, I mean, if I don't know if you remember like Lenovo Tech World 2015 when they announced the Moto Z. They showed off this really crappy like foldable plastic thing, and it was like an early prototype of basically what Samsung showed today, but Lenovo did it 3 years ago. It was obviously crappy in comparison, but you know, that is not the kind of thing that Google was like, oh man, we got to jump on this. Like, we have to make sure there's no fragmentation in this market when all these foldable phones become popular. It's like, that was one, really early, and two, it wasn't Samsung. And so I think that Samsung is going to market this device hard. It's going to be, you know, they're going to push it as unique and cool and techy and fun and, you know, and revolutionary, innovative, you know. And it may be some of those things in some ways. Obviously, the technology they described with all the different changes they had to make with the display technology to make it even possible to where it would be durable and you could open and close it 100,000 times. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not discounting that there has been work. There's been work here.
You saw something very bad at the tech world like 3 years ago. 3 years later, look at Samsung is confident that they can make a mass market, well, not mass market maybe, but that they can commercialize this technology and will have a decent experience. Sure. Like, the technological leap is impressive. Like, as we said at the top of the section, this is undeniably futuristic.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the reason Google's getting on board and getting on board so quickly and soon is because for all we know, this could be a one-off. This could be the Galaxy F, and it could be a kind of, I don't know, there have been similar
Galaxy Samsung. Edge. The Galaxy Edge.
Exactly. The Edge, but then the Edge went on to actually be impactful in terms of, you know, they brought the Edge to the main mm-hmm. lineup. And this seems like a similar kind of experiment. It's like, this is one of those one-off experiments that Samsung's doing, and you know, it could be a one-off, and then we see maybe, I don't know, a foldable device a year or two down the line that's more mainstream, that maybe has a better price, that's like, you know, it's more of an apples and oranges, or not apples and oranges, but like, you know, like an obvious alternative to regular flagship phones. Whereas I don't think this will be. I don't think anyone will go into a store and this will be like, oh man, I'm so stuck between choosing the Note 9 or the Galaxy F. But I think in a couple of years, maybe we will get there. And I think the reason, going back to your question, I think the reason Google's caring is because, one, Samsung's a huge beast of a company, and they sell a ton of phones, and they don't really get to not care unless they just didn't care at all and just let Samsung do their own thing entirely, which is what they obviously. You know, Google's not pushing Wear OS on Samsung much anymore. It doesn't seem like. It seems like they've completely let the reins go on Tizen just being, you know. So it just seems like if they're going to care, they have to go. They have to just get out ahead of it rather than trying to clean up all the mess later.
Actually, thinking about the idea of like having an 8-inch screen, the idea of that as being a productivity device really goes back to the general discussion of whether tablets are the future of productivity. That's a much larger conversation that spans beyond Google and Android. No, definitely it's Chrome OS. But again, like, if we're basing our idea of how successful this could be on like science fiction, where everybody's working on a tablet, they have a million tablets carrying, walking around with them, like, this could be a step to that. I'm just trying to see how far this is going to get. Like, I don't think Samsung is going to like deliver. They'll be the first to it, but if this is ever going to become a mainstream technology that phones just casually have, I definitely don't think Samsung's going to popularize the final experience.
Yeah, I don't know. It seems like I really don't know. I can't predict it. I can't really see where this doesn't. I mean, people. So like smartphone. Let's just look at the price aspect, and this is one thing that's like a hard data point to be able to look at and consider for this conversation is that screens are the most expensive part of a phone, as I mentioned, and this is going to have three times as much screen as the average smartphone has, or more. And so on a, from like, I feel like even the Note 9 and flagship phones that are out today, you know, the iPhone XS, XS Max, for example, or, you know, the Pixel 3 XL even, but not as much because it's a little cheaper. They're all pushing the limit, I think, on what people feel comfortable paying for a phone.
Okay.
And so to me, that's one just data point that you can look at is like, there's no way these are going to be cheap. Therefore, these are going to struggle in the short term. So if, you know, and every technology starts expensive and eventually saturates the market and, you know, there's economies of scale and can eventually get cheaper. And so maybe in 5 to 10 years, this will be what every phone looks like. And I guess there are objective advantages. The one objective advantage is that you can unfold it and get way more screen real estate. And there are cases where it would be nice to have that, I guess. I mean, you know, it'd be nice to have a phone that you can carry in your hand and just use as a phone. And then whenever you're on the subway, you can unfold it and read it or read a book or whatever on the larger display. That's one use case that's it's objectively better. You know, I think it's like you can see that and it makes sense. But I think in the short term, it's like, I don't see people being willing to pay. I don't see people being willing to look at it like I'm getting a phone and a tablet for one price.
Yeah.
I feel like it's gonna be like this is an expensive phone if that makes sense.
So it's usually a fool's error to bet against the technology. Okay, so let's think 5 years ahead. When this is, let's say, this technology is in $1,000, and this is the same as the premium mind phones of today, the obvious disadvantage is slightly thicker hardware versus like a beautiful, slim, compact, regular phone. Right. Where do you think what are users going to pick? Because this, no matter how advanced the technology gets, it's still foldable. It's still going to be thicker. Is going to be a hinge mechanism of some sorts. Like that is that hardware difference will always be present.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But to me, my gut right now, and I don't know, I could be very, very wrong. My gut right now is to think that this is a gimmick. I mean, that's my instinct. My instinct is to think people will stick to the normal phone form factor, and they will continue to get better, get slimmer and have better battery life and have smaller bezels, and people will be most likely to sway toward just buying the prototypical slab of or screen that you can hold in your hand kind of form factor. And that people will also I think that other growing category is tablet/convertible as a productive machine. And I think it'll be a both. You know, it'll be like those will be the two primary devices that people own. I think that form factor like the Pixel Slate and the Surface Pro and stuff are going to become more popular. And you know, I think it'll be that in phones. I think that there will maybe be a market for people that just want to have both in one, so to speak, but have worse versions of both. But I guess if we're talking 5 years down the line, maybe it won't be worse. I don't know. I really don't know. But my gut is to think that this is a gimmick, and it will be short lived. But
it'll be very fascinating to see if Google actually does one.
Like, I'm curious to know what Google thinks of it. Like,
they're doing enthusiastic. The way they phrased it was, So it's 10 years of Android. They started their dev summit saying that the next three things they think are going to be popular in the next 10 years are smartphones getting smarter, safety and well-being, and this idea of a pervasive multi-screen computing, which includes foldable. Again, they haven't really shown the developer support. They mentioned that they're going to have a flag so that devices going so that apps and developers know the state of whether it's folded or unfolded. But we haven't really seen them put massive commitment to detail what developers have to do, what their support is.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how I feel. I mean, that's a pretty broad way to put it. They think that the next big thing is going to be multi-screened. What was the quote?
Pervasive multi-screen experiences. Multi-screen computing. Which includes Android, like a smart.
What does that even wearables. Mean? I mean, multi-screen computing. Is that just like
wearable
screens on everything? Like, is that basically the trend? Okay, well, that's already happening. So, where does foldables come in? I just don't see how that. I don't see how that means foldables. I don't see how that equates to foldables, because it's like we already have. You know, in the Google Home Hub is a thing, and it's going to be pervasive, and we all have. I mean, tablets, the tablet form factor is going to be around. And I think the tablet form factor, I hate to mention Apple again, because everyone hates when I do, but in the promo video for the new iPad Pro, they said something like, it just feels so right to hold light in your hand or something like that, which is stupid. It's Apple marketing speak. But I think there is something about holding a tablet in your hand that just feels good. Which I guess a foldable is a tablet in a sense if you unfold it, but I don't know. It seems to me that I don't know if this is really going to capture the mind of the average consumer. I think Google's right to say that everything's going to have screens, because that trend is not debatable at this point. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah. That's my take. Should probably move on since we've been talking about this a while.
We have one more Samsung thing to talk about, the One UI. This is some user experience stuff. Samsung announced it for the Android Pi devices going forward. They're going to adopt, first it was TouchWiz, then it was a Samsung experience. Now it's One UI, which in summary is putting TouchWiz. All the control. We're never going to stop calling it. Stop trying to rebrand it, Samsung. Anyways, all the controls in the bottom, while it's okay. Basically, it's like the thing about the app bar that shows like the name of the app or the current status, and make it a gigantic box at the top of every single Samsung app, and that it'll show new information when appropriate. It like shows the primary action you're doing, like conversation threads or whatever, at the top of the screen, while all the controls remain at the bottom, which it's not a bad idea. I'm not sure how much support they'll get, but it's a new idea that it is something that Samsung came up with by the looks of it.
Well, that's good. It's good to see Samsung come up with something. Not to say that they don't, but it's good to see that they are actually, I don't know. I have mixed feelings, because I feel like the leaders in user experience design right now are by far Google and Apple. And I don't really have any specific thoughts on anything that Samsung showed with this One UI thing. But it doesn't strike me as particularly good.
Or something that'll get mass adoption besides like Samsung paying like top developers, I don't know, like Twitter to adopt this design or
right. Whatever. Right. Samsung doesn't really have much, I mean, it's actually kind of interesting to see how, you know, Samsung has a ton of weight and pulls a lot. They have a lot of power when it comes to hardware stuff, but on the software side, it just feels like, Bixby is a joke. It's not I mean, no third parties are really taking advantage of it, or, you know, there's not really a third party Bixby speaker ecosystem. You know, TouchWiz has traditionally just been a user experience mess. And I think just looking at the bigger picture, Samsung just does not really have much clout when it comes to anything software, really. And so, yeah, I think that as sad as it is, I think this is going to just jokingly going to go down as another, as TouchWiz 3.0.
Yeah. I like the general premise behind it. It makes sense, but the question is whether it's the best implementation of a correct goal, which is to how to make a UI for taller and taller screens. It looks ugly, to be fair. Like I said, when nothing is selected, it looks like a square app bar for some reason.
Yeah, I don't like anything about the visual look of Samsung's UI. I honestly, that hasn't changed in years. Actually, that probably hasn't changed since TouchWiz. I mean, it's evolved and it's gotten very, very slightly better since it was actually called TouchWiz. But it still is like, I don't know. I'm not a fan of the squircle at all. Like the app icons, and it now looks like they're bringing the squircle to every single aspect of the UI with this redesign, and it's just like not attractive at all to me personally. But I don't know. I'm know, currently a big fan of material, new material.
Yeah, absolutely. The squircle made its way to like Android eventually. To Android proper, this you can customize the app icon.
I think that was done because of Samsung,
basically. But anyways, we have one last Samsung thing, which is that Pi will be arriving on the first S9 Note 9 devices in January, which is so much better than which is in line with last year. Honestly, historically, it's an improvement, and maybe this is the benefits of Google's various projects to speed up updates over time, but I think they should be commended for that.
Yeah, cool. Good job, Samsung. All right, now that we've spent half an hour on Samsung, which is very unusual for this podcast, we should move on, I think, a little bit to Made by Google stuff. First up, we can talk about Pixel Slate a little bit, which... So Best Buy, if we're to believe Best Buy's dates, it's launching on the 22nd.
Yes.
Which is
the week of Thanksgiving.
Yes. It's very interesting. The week of Thanksgiving, and it's like 15 days away. So Pixel Slate is imminent. I don't know if anyone is like still excited for it. I still am. I'm really excited for it. I think it's going to be probably, I'm hoping that I will be pleasantly surprised and the performance will be top notch and it will be my favorite Google product of the year. That's the optimistic side. The pessimistic side is it will be hot trash and I will be sad. But yeah.
It's funny. It's because sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, what's funny? I want to know.
My only interest in the Pixel Slate is as a content consumption tablet.
Really? I'm thinking of it exactly the opposite. I'm thinking of it as like, I have never used a convertible type tablet product as my productivity device. And so I'm really excited to give that a shot. I'm not going to be able to do some things. Like, we'll see how podcasting goes. Because I don't think the necessary apps are there. But for most of my workflow, I think I'll be fine on the Pixel Slate if and only if the performance is up to par.
Yes. And meanwhile, I really want to use a Chrome OS tablet that doesn't have a keyboard attached to the underside, to the back when in tablet mode.
Yeah, exactly. It'll be cool. And then, yeah, the screen looks really nice on the Pixel Slate, so the content consumption aspect is cool too. But yeah, this week, or today actually, yesterday, it went up for pre-order at Best Buy. So interestingly, there's a little bit of difference here between the models that are available at different stores. It looks like only the M3 and up are going to be available at Best Buy, and it looks like Amazon too. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's two different Celeron models that start at, no, is there one? Is it one?
There's two.
The 4 gig RAM and the 8 gig RAM Celeron models will only be available at the Google store. It seems, unless something changes between now and like next week, it looks like 599 entry point for the Pixel Slate is going to be only Google store. And do you have any theories as to why that is? Do you think that Google maybe decided that Celeron's not up to par, and so they want to make sure that the masses who are going to the store and buying this thing don't immediately come home and get frustrated? I don't know. It seems like they're making it so that the only way you can buy the Celeron is if you explicitly decide to. Like, if you know you want the Celeron model and you go specifically to the Google store to get it. It's weird.
I think this comes to the idea of, like, my frame of reference on a tablet is still as a content consumption device. That should change over time. But my crackpot conspiracy theory is maybe the people that just want to use it for fun, to watch movies, to play Android games or whatnot, to simply browse, maybe they'll be incentivized to buy it from the Google store because they don't want to spend so much more money on a secondary computer. Again, $599 is not cheap. You can get many good decent Windows laptops at a price point, but maybe if you just want to try it out, just buy it from the Google store. But everybody else that wants to get work done, this $799 model and up is what Google is pushing it users for towards.
Yeah, I can't think of really any like tangible reason why this would be. I don't. It just doesn't make sense to me. But it is what it is. I guess it's still true to say that the Pixel Slate starts at $599. But you know, I feel like the majority of buyers. First of all, it doesn't seem like this product is going to sell super crazy well, because you know, even Microsoft's line of convertibles does not really sell all that well in terms of sheer numbers. And this is even like, it's living in the shadows of the shadow, if that makes sense. Like the Microsoft convertibles are kind of the shadow of the laptop market. And this is like the latest kid on the block that is like, you know, and it runs Chrome OS, which unfortunately, even though it's not necessarily deserved, it still has that stigma of like, oh, Chrome OS can't do any real work. You got to have a Windows machine to get any real work done because, you know, whatever. But
even if the Pixel Slate does super well, will it do better or worse than the Pixel Book from last year?
I think it'll do worse personally. I don't know. I don't know. I have no clue. We'll probably never know the official sales numbers. But it doesn't seem like the Pixel Slate is generating as much buzz as the Pixel Book did to me. I could be completely wrong. I have no clue. That's that. It's the model that's available on Amazon right now is the $1599 model. So if you want to pre-order on Amazon right now, you've got to pitch the big bucks for the i7. So that's all I want.
They should call that the Google edition, honestly.
Yeah, although we asked them about that, we're like, so why do you make the i7 model and charge $2,000 for it? Is it because that's the one you want to use? And they're like, actually, no, we've only used the M3 and the Celeron models. So, you know, I don't know. Apparently that one's fine for them. If it's fine for them, it'll probably be fine for us. We'll see. I'm excited to get my hands on a unit. Should be soon. I can't say when, but it should be soon. And so, yeah, keep an eye out for that. Finally today, I guess, was there anything else we want to talk about before we go to our final topic of the day? I guess we could talk a little bit about
Pixel 3.
Yeah,
various fixes.
Various fixes on Pixel 3. There was the charging rapidly thing with 5-watt wireless chargers. It now says charging slowly, which is the accurate verbiage. Now playing history is coming to Pixel 2 and 2 XL. This was the last ever official mandated a security patch for the Nexus 6P and Nexus 5X. So
farewell
to that. And then Google's also going to roll out an update. We reported that they're rolling out an update to fix the memory management issues, which we talked about that in our post Pixel 3 review show, talking about all the memory management problems. And as we predicted, it seems to be a minor thing that Google's going to fix in the coming weeks, probably with the December security patch, we'd guess.
Hopefully.
And then another thing was that there were two new code names that popped up in AR Core, which what do you think these are? There's Bonito and Sargo, right? Or
yes,
is that right? And one of them we've seen before.
Yeah. The first one, Bonito, has, according to benchmarks and the reliable win future, it has a Snapdragon 710 processor, which is a mid-ranger that would be in line with these very long-running rumors of Google making some kind of mid-range device for developing markets to boost sales there.
Yeah, reports for the last year have been saying that, you know, I think there was one report that said that budget phones were coming to India like early this year. And then there was another report that was like, just kidding, they're coming in the summer. And now we're here in early November and we still haven't seen anything. So it seems like that's happening, but we don't know when.
My theory for the fact that two devices is that there's a one small, one large. It's one's this regular model, one's an XL model. I think that ends up working well.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I don't think we have any evidence to suggest that these devices are anything but that. And then I guess finally on this stuff, Google's returning to CES this year, which I booked or signed up for a few things this week. Unfortunately, it's already that time of year again. CES is like 3 weeks away and Google is going to have a booth again this year. Last year was their first year with like a dedicated Google booth. And it was huge. It was like right outside the North Hall of the Las Vegas Convention Center. And it was like one of the biggest booths of the whole show. And this year it looks like the booth that they have is still outdoor and still going to be entirely their own, like their own space. And it looks like it's like twice the size of last year's. So yeah, Google's really making I wonder if we're going to see more ads like all over the monorail and stuff. I wonder how hard Google's push is. This is actually really interesting for us. CES years has gotten more. It went from CES basically being a show, even as recently as 2014, like being a show of just new Android phones from like, you know, Asus and like some of the other like smaller players, you know, ZTE and some others. But lately in the last few years, ever since the assistant has become a big deal, it's like not only a marketing thing at CES for Google, like, you know, all the Hey Google thing. I just didn't activate like all the stuff in my house, but you know, all the OK Google things all over the monorail and stuff, but also all the products that are launching at the event that are like, you know, various speakers, like anything that ties in with the assistant is now a big deal at CES. It's like the prime place to announce and launch all that stuff. And so I'm actually looking forward to CES a little bit more and more every year for the last few years, because it just gets more and more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of assistant tie-ins, I guess we can talk a little bit about Nest now, which is for those who don't know, if you're watching this show, you absolutely should know. Nest is a company that makes smart home devices, and they are currently under the umbrella of Google Hardware, currently being led by Rishi Chandra. Google Home Hardware. So even under Google Hardware, in the Google Home division of Google Hardware. And before that, they were an Alphabet subsidiary. So they were actually kind of like the flagship Alphabet company for a couple of years. Like that, like whenever the Alphabet, you know, structure change happened, that was like, you know, the most obvious of the many companies. And then now Waymo is the, is more the prototypical or the flagship, I think, Alphabet company. And before that, you know, Nest was just acquired by Google. So Google, Nest has been in Google and then out of Google and now is back in Google. And over the last couple or like year, happening ever since that Google decided to bring them back in the loop was that all the like the teams are basically merging. So even as recently as a year ago, Nest and Google both had their own legal departments, their own PR departments, their own marketing, etc. And it seems like under the leadership of Rishi and Rick Osterloh, you know, at a higher level, they're trying to unify everything as much as possible. And I guess that it makes sense from a lot of, in a lot of ways, because the assistant is so pervasive and Google wants it in everything that they build, and they want to bring as many assistant functions as possible to everything they build. And so from a hardware and software integration standpoint, it's been, you know, it makes a lot of sense. But also today I reported that I've heard from a source that Nest is actually going to, or it looks like Google is actually working on a rebrand for Nest itself, which it kind of makes sense. I mean, if you think about it, Dropcam was a company that Nest acquired before Google, or I don't know if that, I can't remember if that was before or after Google acquired Nest. But after Nest acquired Dropcam, Dropcam was rebranded. Basically, they took the Dropcam and rebranded it as Nestcam. And now it looks like they are going to bring Nest. Well, now that they have brought Nest into the fold, it looks like they might ditch the Nest brand altogether and just go with Google branding. We're not sure. We haven't heard anything about what exactly these devices might actually be called. We're not sure if they're going to get rid of Nest and call it Google Cam or something. Or, you know, Google Secure. That kind of seems like a hokey brand to just put Google in front of everything and just replace Nest. But it does look like they're rebranding it in some way. Do you have any thoughts
Google
on
that? Google Home Cam. That's like the most obvious thing to me, putting home in front of it.
Oh, yeah. That would make sense in some ways.
I don't think it's good, but as is, I don't think consumers really understand the Nest distinction anyways. So I think it will help.
Yeah, I have mixed feelings about it because I have a fondness and appreciation for the Nest brand. I think it's really good branding. If Nest were its own company, you know, I think it creates a really friendly and not creepy image for, you know, a variety of products that could be perceived to be pretty invasive. So yeah, I mean that's pretty much the gist of what we reported. There's not really much else to it. We'll hopefully learn more in the coming months. It seems like if they're doing this now, if they're working on it now, it seems like maybe they're working on it for a deadline of next fall. So maybe we could see, you know, a next generation Nest Cam or a new thermostat or a new security feature or product or something. We might see smart home devices that Google announces at next fall's event that might not, you know, might not have the Nest brand. I guess interestingly, we haven't really talked about this, but I guess we could start now. Why not? What do you think is in the works for next year's hardware event?
Oh my gosh! Okay.
Or do we want to just wait? We can wait. We can
we
wait.
Can, we should wait. I think we should wait.
All right. Well, let's wait then. Is there anything else we want to talk about before we close out the show?
No, the one thing I had about Nest was...
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
How else could it get better besides a rebrand? They promised integration Google last year. Like, Osterloh promised more integrations, more AI. I'm just kind of at a loss to see how it could get better. Different designs.
This is one thing that I think about often is I think that the Google Assistant being so like I feel like Google needs to get, I think what the one major thing they need to do is now that these smart devices and these assistant enabled speakers, and I mean, if you've really gotten into the ecosystem, you have, you know, you've got a JBL Link View in your bathroom, you've got a Home Hub in your kitchen, you've got a JBL something or other speaker in your garage that you use to listen to out there or take to the beach with you, you've got Google Homes throughout your house, you've got Nest cams. If you've gone all in, you've got Google products all throughout your house. I mean, in my case, I'm probably the closest person I know in my life to someone who's gone all in, to the point where, I mean, I've got Google Wi-Fi and everything's connected to Google Wi-Fi, and I've got 3 Nest cams and I've got, you know, 5 or 6 Google Homes. One thing I've noticed having all this, I don't know if you remember, but at one point Google added the Google Assistant to the Nest Cam IQ. Which is like awesome, but I feel like Google's actual implementation of that and actually making the assistant accessible on any device that can hear your voice really, is not so great. It's been, I've had mixed experiences where, you know, 2 devices will for some reason both respond to me, even if they're both logged in the same account. Especially in the case of the Nest Cam IQ, for the first few months I was using it, I couldn't have it enabled because my home that was in the kitchen would hear me when I was trying to talk to the IQ, even the IQ would like light up or whatever. I think what I'm getting at is, I think one thing Google could do is all these products that are Google owned in our home and in our lives should get smarter about seamlessly recognizing where you are, which device you're talking to, and responding to you from the right device. It seems like, you know, they have the bare bones of that, but it just doesn't work very well right now, at least in my experience. You know, like the far field microphones do have like a hardware limitation, I guess. It's like they can only do so much. They only have so much data to work with. You know, there have been cases where I've been sitting in my living room. In my living room, I have a Google Home Mini, and I said the hot word, and a Google Home that was literally on the other side of the house, for some reason, whatever algorithm Google uses, thought that my voice was closer to that one than the one that was actually in the room. So I guess what I'm saying is, you know, as the ecosystem keeps growing and as Nest products are supposedly no longer going to be Nest products and everything has Google Assistant, not to mention if Chromecast devices have Google Assistant built in as well, which a lot of them, you know, Android TV has Google Assistant, obviously, but if every Chromecast, for instance, had Google Assistant functionality, you know, like there's lots of products, and it just seems like it would be really nice if they could really nail it and make it so seamless to where it was always the right device that I wanted to respond to me. That's one place I think they could get better.
That is a solid vision. Cohesive one.
Yeah. And even tablets and phones too, on top of that, you know, there's some level of authentication that needs to happen. And that's annoying too. It's like sometimes I'll be in the living room, my phone's right next to me, and I'll say the hot word, and the Google Home that's on across the room is the one that responds to me, not my phone. You know, and it would be nice if all of our phones were just always Google Homes, whether or not we had Pixel stands, you know? Yeah. That's one thing. Is there anything you've thought of like ways Nest products can better integrate with?
I think more of a design thing, that the home has, the Google Home devices have a specific look. And this is based on the assumption that it's going to be branded as such. But I think they could look like they're from the same family. And that might help consumers.
Yeah, that's although I don't feel like they're too far off right now. You know, it doesn't.
Yeah.
If you look at the Nest products on the Google Store, it doesn't scream, you know, that they're different. They're just not quite there in terms of, you know, taking advantage of the fabric and stuff, and you know, a lot of the stuff that Ivy Ross is doing with industrial design is not really shown up yet, but it will probably in the next year or so. So I think that pretty much rounds out the show. Anything else that we didn't talk about that's super important? I guess another rebrand, just to throw this in there, Project Fi is actually getting rid of the project name, and they're going to be called Google Fi. So that's another rebrand that's happening. There's always rebrands happening.
Google constantly in a state of rebranding, seems like, sometimes.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, I guess until next week, you can tune into Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast every Wednesday afternoon and publish on Wednesday afternoons or Thursday mornings. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always, and thanks to Abner, as always, for joining me, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.